you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Content warning. This episode contains discussion of murder and sexual molestation. It also includes some profanity.
Over the last few episodes, we've been taking an in-depth look at the legal career of Andy Baldwin. He, of course, is one of the defense attorneys representing Richard Allen in the Delphi murders case. It is our hope that these episodes will help us all better understand the Indiana legal system and may even give us some clues as to what to expect in the ongoing Delphi case.
Today, we conclude our look at the career of Andy Baldwin by focusing our attention on a recent controversial case. Before we get started, it's worth noting a hard truth about the system. Here's Johnson County, Indiana attorney Mike Ogier.
Our system is predicated upon this idea that you're innocent until proven guilty, and that the burden is on the state to come in and prove all of these material elements of a crime against you. That's theoretically how it's supposed to happen. But you can't overcome, I don't think we, and there's no, you know, I don't know a better way, but the reality is in a system built of human beings, a jury sitting there in a courtroom who in large measure probably has some degree of faith in their law enforcement, naturally is going to be inclined to thinking that the guy sitting there on trial is guilty. The reality is that the jury is sitting there, and I believe in there's certain types of cases, murder, perhaps one, but most particularly sex offense cases, child molest, rape, in particular child molestation cases and things of that nature. I am 100% convinced that you are guilty until you're proven innocent. I understand it's not the standard, but that is the reality of the situation. When you are accused, just being accused of that crime for anybody that's ever had to deal with that, that it is later found out that they are exonerated or that, you know, something of that nature happened, somebody has recanted, something couldn't have happened or whatever, it's extraordinarily rare that those people get their lives back in any real meaningful way.
The odds are therefore stacked against people accused of serious crimes. And it may be even worse in those cases that attract widespread media coverage. In those instances, when people get early and often incomplete accounts of what happened, they may form their own conclusions about the case. It may be difficult to change their minds, even when more information becomes available.
With all of that in mind, let's consider the case of Marcus Salatin. We will begin by giving you the basic facts as they first appeared in outlets like the Franklin Daily Journal and the Indianapolis Star. Remember, reporters working at those papers were relying on court filings and information from police investigators.
According to those early reports, on October 31st, 2020, Marcus Salatin, a 16-year-old, and a group of three other people arranged to meet in a neighborhood in Greenwood, Indiana, for the purpose of having a fist fight. The three other people showed up in a single vehicle. Before the first person got out, Marcus allegedly pulled out a gun and started shooting. One teen was killed, another was injured. The deceased teen was 15-year-old Cassius Davis.
Joseph Villanueva, who is then the Johnson County, Indiana prosecutor, charged Salatin with murder. If convicted, the 16-year-old would face up to 71 years in prison.
And then Andy Baldwin and his colleagues Michael Auger and Carrie Miles took Salatin's case.
My name is Anya Kane. I'm a journalist.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee. I'm an attorney.
We first connected while looking into the Burger Chef murders, an Indiana cold case. Together, we built a spreadsheet documenting hundreds of cases of restaurant-related homicides. That original spreadsheet gave way to our podcast, The Murder Sheet.
Now we maintain that same research-centric, investigative approach as we look into all sorts of homicides, including unsolved cases, historical crimes, and, of course, restaurant murders.
We don't just chat about the headlines. Our podcast is a platform for our journalism. The Murder Sheet focuses on investigative reporting, thoughtful analysis, thorough research, and in-depth interviews. We're The Murder Sheet.
And this is The Delphi Murders. Andy Baldwin for the Defense, Part 3. Guilty Until Proven Innocent.
Before getting into the details of the Salatin case, let's remember Andy's general methods and approaches.
Here's Clark Waymeyer, who worked closely with Andy for several years.
So cases that seem on the surface very complicated, you read it maybe in the paper, you read maybe some of the facts, and it's like, I don't know, this looks pretty bad, Andy. This looks not good for us. And he just had the mentality of every case is winnable. He believes his clients. Fights tooth and nail, particularly Andy's brand of criminal defense. There's almost always reasonable doubt. There's almost always at least something that the jury might hang their hat on.
But Andy's philosophy seems to be that in order to find that reasonable doubt, you have to put in the work.
We would go talk to clients. We would go talk to witnesses. We would knock on doors. We would ask for videotape of things the police hadn't. I mean, he was always about doing his own investigation, hiring expert witnesses, talking to anybody and everybody that might have a different take and might give us a complete picture on any case.
With all of that in mind, let's get to the Salatin case. We've heard how it was reported in the press. Now let's hear how it appeared to Andy and his team. Here again is Johnson County Attorney Mike Auger.
When we first find out, we get a probable cause affidavit. He's accused of murder. And there was an altercation or an incident that had happened in his neighborhood where he lived, where Marcus had a gun and shot into a car that had been in the neighborhood, ended up killing, shot one kid in the head, hit another one in the arm, and completely missed the third kid in the car. And basically, the way that it was initially presented by the state was Marcus had lured these kids in this stupid high school type age beef into the neighborhood to come over there for a fist fight. And Marcus had shown up to this fist fight with a gun and just unloaded his gun into the car, ready to kill these kids when they showed up. So he was accused with murder.
The defense team consisted of Andy Baldwin, Michael Jay, and Carrie Miles. We've talked a lot about Andy's skills in a courtroom, but behind the scenes, he was also known for his ability to bring together different minds in order to best tackle the challenges a particular case presented. That was certainly true in the Marcus Saladin case.
All three of us, actually, I would say fairly say, worked it together. I did a lot of the legwork, I would say, in looking through the photographs. And I mean, there was a ton of discovery that came in. They got all these kids' cell phones. So you're looking through all these pictures that these kids have and videos. And then you start finding some Snapchat messages.
Going through all of that material, one thing became clear. Here's Johnson County Attorney Carrie Miles.
The kids or the people in the car were not really upstanding citizens, nor were they interested in truth-telling.
Mike was in a position to access more sources than most.
Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at my own kids were friends with people that were kind of around this other circle of kids that were involved in this fight, in this dispute. So I was able to talk to some kids that were kind of close to the situation that kind of knew more. And we were able to gather and get, quite honestly, some Snapchat videos and messages maybe that we wouldn't have otherwise been able to get. And we were able to put together this picture. And ultimately, the reality for Marcus is that what was going on was not that Marcus laid in wait, but what had happened is that two kids, unfortunately, in the car were the real instigators. There was a 19-year-old kid. And I won't say these kids' names, but it's out there. But, you know, there was a 19-year-old and then another older juvenile, like 17. The child who died was, as I recall, 15 or so. And that's what was really the sad thing. And I'll say this for the whole story. That kid was truly innocent in every stretch of the word. He was a completely innocent bystander in a much bigger situation that he didn't have any knowledge of. And unfortunately, he got killed. In the end, you find out when you start doing some investigation that this boy and Marcus were friends. They played on the same football team and stuff together when they were younger. And it's just all stupidity, for lack of a better word, that resulted in this boy dying when he didn't have to die. And I really blame the other two.
The whole story of what had actually led to the shooting was right there in the social media posts.
What you discover is that in some months preceding this incident, the two older kids had gotten into a fight with Marcus. They had basically robbed him and they had gotten into this beef with Marcus. It started in a Kroger parking lot up on 31 North in Whiteland. Marcus and another friend of his were just walking through the parking lot and all these kids like to fight. I don't understand it. So they swoop up on him out of nowhere. And as they say, they try to run his pockets, you know, steal his money, whatever he's got. And they jump him. There's like three or four kids jump out of this car and beat up Marcus. The kid, Marcus's friend, kind of takes off running, kind of leaves Marcus there and he gets beat down pretty good. You know, cut up, bruised and things, dragged in the parking lot. And, he calls his mom and his mom is freaking out. And he's like, look, mom, I don't call the cops. It's just going to make it worse, but I just got beat up. This is what's going on. And so she kind of freaks out and, you know, she calls the cops anyway and is like, I don't want to tell anybody. And so she meets a police officer and she finally has this conversation with the cop that's like, he doesn't want to report this. I'm afraid it's going to get worse. And the police officer's like, well, if you don't want to say anything, then it's not much I can do. If I don't have names or situations, or I don't know where to go. And she kind of drops it, but she is very scared for her son's life because these kids had been kind of harassing him up to that point. Well, then you find out that after that beatdown, as it occurred That was in like August of 2020. Between August and October, there's more stupidity that's going on social media between these kids. And those other two older boys are now sending Marcus pictures of guns, pictures of them literally holding videos, holding an AK-47 with all sorts of crazy threatening language. Like, next time we see you is going to be like this, and just all kinds of stupidity. And this goes on where they're looking and they're enticing him on numerous occasions to meet us, you know, come on, meet, you know, we're going to, and where are you and what are you doing? And Marcus is trying to literally blow them off until finally one night, it appears that one of these kids realizes, I don't know if you know what beacon services are on, but here in Indiana, there's like a real estate search tool called Beacon. And this kid sends Marcus a screenshot of the beacon showing his mom's name and their home address. And he's like, basically like, I gotcha. I know where you are. We're coming now. And so we're coming there tomorrow or whatever it is. And so now Marcus knows, and he had made several attempts prior to that to just like, you know, and we've also found out from other messages from my kids, friends, and other people surrounding that these boys had been basically canvassing all these kids, like, where does Marcus live? Where's his address and whatever. And so you find out they're looking, then aha, they've got the thing. And so Marcus, I think, is very understandably scared at this point. He's scared for his family. He's scared for different things. And so they finally said, we're in the neighborhood. He goes outside and they swoop up on him in a car. And now a lot of this happens to be on a Ring video. The car comes screeching in pretty fast. The rear window is partly rolled down. It's in October. And Marcus, is very understandably scared. He pulls the gun. He sees something glimmering in the rear window that's open. He thinks they're pulling the gun on him. He doesn't know what's happening. In hindsight, what probably happened there was that one of the kids in the backseat had his phone up and he was ready to videotape, I think, what he was going to be a fight. But the younger boy was in the passenger seat and that's who swooped up. And that's the one that got shot. And they were putting the younger kid up to getting out and to fighting Marcus, evidently, who knows what really was going on. Marcus shoots into the car. They take off and, he's charged with murder. But the state only knows what these kids tell them and what these kids are like, we came over there for a fist fight and he shows up with a gun and he kills our buddy. And they of course leave out everything that happened in the months up to that.
There were other ways that the defense team felt that the state's investigation had been lackluster.
The shooting happens, the driver drives off, you know, and the car kind of comes to a rest where the police are called in this cul-de-sac. The police hadn't gone around and talked to everybody in that cul-de-sac, you know? So we start knocking on doors and you find out that, crazily enough, when the car came to a rest, somebody was watching from their front porch and they saw the driver jump out of the car, take off and run up in between. So our contention was that these kids showed up with a gun too. Okay. That these kids, you know, the people hear the gunshots, there's commotion. They hear this car screech to a halt in the, you know, and the kids understandably freaking out. His buddy has been shot in the passenger seat next to him. But you find out that the first thing that the driver does is jump out of the car, run off. You can see him run off on some Ring camera up in between two houses, kind of crouch down, fiddle around, do whatever he's doing, and run back over to the car. When the police, you know, we got all this body cam footage, you know, from the all these officers had body cam at the time. You find out that nobody ever talked to that guy who saw the kid run up. While the police were there that day, nobody went up into that little nook in the house and searched around for what was going on. And did the kid drop a gun over there? What did he do? You know, if he did, no one ever found it. No one ever saw it. But there's another piece of evidence that we find as defense lawyers that you're coming now to the prosecutor and you're making, you know, the detectives like, did you talk to Mr. Smith who lives right there? No, we didn't do that. So it's shocking how often that happens. It really does.
The time came when the two survivors from the car had to sit for depositions with the defense team.
In the 27 years I've done this, I would rank that as top three depositions in my entire career to be in on.
We knew walking into that deposition or those depositions that they were liars.
Mike and Andy and I all brought different personalities and different strengths to the table, and we fought about no, don't do this, yes, do this, and we would have battles, and we ultimately would come down, you know, on the team side of what we're going to do. I asked the easy lead up questions that day. So my role was not spectacular, but it did play a little bit of a role because they were bored and annoyed with me, and I was just asking the basics. And then Mike and Andy were putting the hammer down, and it was a great combination of the three of us. It was amazing.
Carrie was the one, you know, depositions can take any number of different forms. Lots of times you like to have people just kind of tell the story kind of chronologically, tell us what happened from A to B in a very non-defensive way. And so that's the way that we did it. Is we let Carrie go in and very calmly. And if you met her, she's very calm, kind of meek, quiet person. She can get loud. Don't get upset with me, Carrie, for saying that you're meek. She can hold herself with the boys and all that. But Carrie, our plan is to let Carrie just kind of do the chronological history. What happened next? Okay. Tell me what happened next. Okay. Tell me what happened without really challenging them at all. Because we already knew that whatever bullshit that they were going to come in there and say, we had a bunch of ammunition ready to attack them with. So that was helpful because as she's sitting there doing her bit, letting them just kind of tell the chronological story, I was able to be sitting there listening and getting my points lined up. I've got this message. I've got this Snapchat. I've got this video. And then... You know, we would typically just take a little break, maybe use the bathroom, come back, and then I would take over. And, I asked very aggressive questions, and I have a tendency, you know, I'm a pretty emotional guy at times, passionate, especially about things like the truth and other stuff like that. So I was very, you know, confrontational, called them liars to their face. I mean, you know, the idea was, you know, it just exactly that. And the first kid, I couldn't believe it. I mean, he sat there and took being a liar and still held on to his ridiculous story through the whole thing, even though I'm telling him everybody in the room doesn't believe a single word he says. And he was so arrogant and ridiculous getting up and walking out. The other kid was the oldest kid of the three. In the end, I guess maybe deep down buried under a very rough exterior, he had a little bit of a conscience buried in there because he just at some point started to crumble and you could see his chin and his lips start to quiver. And, you know, once he start, you know, he hung his head in shame and I knew that he was a liar and everybody knew that he was a liar. He started to bawl and then just literally came out with all of it. And I, you know, and I think the prosecutor is just sitting there thinking, oh shit, what has just happened? And, you know, it's sad because the flip side of it is these cops didn't ask these kids any of these questions at the time. They didn't do any history. I mean, every kid is on their stupid phone and these are all kids, 15, 16, 17, 19. They didn't pour through their phones like we did. They didn't go around and talk to anybody around the situation. Who were you talking to in the nights before? You know, had they done any basic investigation on those two kids? Like, okay, let's see everybody's text messages and cell phones for the day or two or three leading up into this. They would have, no, but they did. They sat there, they listened to those kids and they just put it on paper. And that's unfortunately what you get a lot.
After the damage done to the prosecution's witness in the depositions, the defense and the prosecutor needed to decide how to proceed.
There was this incident where me, Kerry Miles, and Andy Baldwin went to the prosecutor's office to meet to have some discussion about how to resolve this case. And, we were adamant on a dismissal.
The prosecutor was willing to drop the murder charge, but wanted Marcus Salatin to plead guilty to a level 6 felony of criminal recklessness and carrying a handgun without a license. To make the difference clear, when he was charged with murder, Marcus faced the possibility of serving 71 years in prison. If he pled guilty to these other charges, he would only face a sentence of about 2.5 years.
I still remember when the prosecutor offered a level 6 felony off of a murder charge. Frankly, Kerry and I, in our minds, were like, hell yes, this needs to get resolved, and you would be stupid not to take that plea. Andy didn't want to. We had to argue with him to get that situation done. Amazingly, it did get done and it got resolved. But all of that happens not only because we worked the case hard, but it doesn't happen without them knowing that they're going to go to trial with somebody that's going to really put 100% into this defense. And so without his reputation, anybody else, I don't even care if they weren't scared of going to trial, that doesn't happen the way that it does ultimately, not without his reputation, quite frankly.
The deal was not popular.
The public was incensed by what had happened and by that plea agreement. It was just, the stupid phone calls we got at our office from people really upset. And I understand that the deceased boy's family was very upset. Unfortunately, nobody knew the real culprits in this situation were the other two kids.
At the murder sheet, we're all about immersive audio experiences.
That's why we love Audible. An Audible subscription gives you access to thousands of audiobook titles. We especially enjoy their robust selection of mysteries, thrillers, and true crime.
I love Audible. I've really enjoyed listening to A Wicked Snow by Greg Olson. This story is all about a CSI investigator with a dark past and a terrible family secret. When I'm listening to Audible, it plunks me right down in the middle of the story. It's so spine-tingling that I can practically feel the cold air on my skin. Audible is your one-stop destination for thrillers and mysteries. Just be prepared to get spooked in the best possible way.
Listening to audiobooks offers a wonderful respite from the day. Audible allows you to listen on the go. I love taking a walk or a drive and just getting lost in a story. My favorite audiobook on Audible so far is Presumed Innocent, the book track edition. This classic legal thriller by Scott Turow is enhanced by a gripping musical soundtrack that amplifies the story's suspense and profound emotional beats.
As a new member, you can try out Audible for free for 30 days. This is such a valuable membership, and you get access to so many new listening experiences, including podcasts, Audible originals, and Audible exclusives, like the Words Plus Music series.
Visit audible.com/msheet or text msheet to 500-500. A weight loss journey can feel like a lonely struggle, but it doesn't have to be.
For so many of us, lifestyle changes, like deciding to lose weight, adopting a nutritious diet, and taking up fun exercises, are all about putting our own health and wellness first. But it can be really hard to know where to begin, or how to keep the weight off once we've seen some progress. Quick fixes like soup diets and juice cleanses are unsustainable. There's a much better way to embark on this journey that over 200,000 people have already chosen. We're talking about the Row Body Program.
Here's how it works. Row gives you access to one of the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Their Row Body Program then sets up a comprehensive weight loss program tailored to your specific lifestyle, health status, and goals. In addition to the weekly shot, you get one-on-one coaching with a registered nurse that can help you adopt and stick with lifestyle changes like exercise routines and nutritious diets. It's a comprehensive program that sees participants lose 15 to 20% of their weight in a year on average. But the real benefit is that you keep that weight off. This is weight loss at its most sustainable.
With Roe, the average weight loss is 15 to 20% of your weight in 1 year, in conjunction with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to roe.co/msheet. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. Go to roe.co/msheet. That's ro.co/msheet.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
We chose to highlight the Marcus Salatin case because it seemed to us to serve as a great example of what a defense attorney like Andy Baldwin actually does. A good defense attorney looks hard at the evidence against his or her client, works to discover more information that might paint a fuller picture of the crucial events, and then fights to hold the system to account.
Defense attorneys may occasionally be annoying or irritating, or they may end up helping to get a result that leaves the public feeling profoundly unsatisfied. But they are also absolutely crucial to keeping our system of justice functioning and fair.
So what did we learn about Andy Baldwin?
What are we taking away from doing this 3-part series? And what will we be looking at as the Delphi case goes forward?
Well, this seems to be an attorney with a laid-back personality that belies an intimidating reputation. Andy Baldwin seems to emphasize teamwork and collaboration, but also stands out in the courtroom as a gifted trial attorney. He emphasizes the importance of telling a strong story from the jump, in an opening statement, and even before that. But he's also flexible enough to jumble up chapters and freestyle on cross.
He shows up to do battle for his clients, but manages to charm juries and judges and sometimes even the prosecution. Based on all of that, Andy Baldwin strikes us as very much a believer in the mission of criminal defense. That commitment seems to go far deeper than some buzzword on a website or a billboard.
And he's put all that to use in pulling off some major triumphs before, winning cases that seemed hopeless on the surface. On another level, we are also impressed by the fact that Andy's peers were willing to talk about him with us. We get the sense that's because he's well-known and well-loved in this tight-knit community of people who've come out of the legal field of Johnson County.
They all seem very much aware of his quirks, but they all struck us as admiring his work ethic and passion and his skills. And they also seemed to us to care deeply about him as a person. We think that speaks for itself.
And now, to close us out, here's Mike.
His gift and his power is definitely in the story. And for who he is as a person, that's where he it all comes down to for him is he's not the sharpest guy when it comes to the rules of evidence. He's not the sharpest guy maybe about the intricacies of DNA or blood spatter or whatever. That's not his forte. He is not a very detail-oriented guy. What he is a very big picture person and an extremely good storyteller to the way that he can, you know, weave facts to keep people interested and ultimately lead them to either a punchline in a joke that they get or a conclusion in a story that they can understand. That usually amounts to reasonable suspicion that something didn't freaking happen when it, you know, maybe did. I mean, he just loves what he does. It's not about money or anything. I really think it's about the stories. I think that the thing that draws him to work every day, again, is not money. Andy could make way more money than he's making. He doesn't. He takes on people's causes for the story. He loves the stories and he loves the people interaction and he loves telling the stories about what happens after the story is over. That's just who he is. I mean, he lives for his work and he just works nonstop, or he's present there in the office. I mean, talking to people, talking about their stories, talking to potential new clients. I've literally had this conversation with him. I don't know if I'm ashamed to admit it or not, but there have been times, especially when we work together and we talk about money, because it would become a frustration for me that, you know, man, Andy, you know, you can make way more money than, you know, he's got a huge team over there and you could make way more money than you're making. What are you doing, man? I don't understand your business model here. What in the world are you thinking? And ultimately, at the end of the day, he just will come. It's just not about the money. He likes to have the team. He likes to have people around him that are involved in this story and whatever. Maybe that's the story of his life as it's going on too, because that's really what pays dividends for him, are the human interactions that he's having with everybody around him. And I mean that not only from lawyers, but from his staff people, to interns that are going to work there, to whoever. He is just a genuine person, a genuinely friendly guy who will care and who does care about everybody he interacts with. That says a lot, and I appreciate that. I guess I don't understand it always, but I get where he's coming from. That's what fills his heart and his soul, is people and their stories.
We wanted to take a moment to thank all of the people who took time out of their busy schedules to speak with us about Andy Baldwin.
Specifically, we'd like to thank Ted Adams, Mike Auger, Lance Hamner, Ashley Hubbard, Carrie Miles, Rob Seat, Heather Sida, Mitch Westerman, and Clark Waymire.
Thanks so much for listening to The Murder Sheet. If you have a tip concerning one of the cases we cover, please email us at murdersheet@gmail.com. If you have actionable information about an unsolved crime, please report it to the appropriate authorities.
If you're interested in joining our Patreon, that's available at www.patreon.com/murdersheet. If you want to tip us a bit of money for records requests, you can do so at www.buymeacoffee.com/murdersheet. We very much appreciate any support.
Special thanks to Kevin Tyler Greenlee, who composed the music for The Murder Sheet, and who you can find on the web at kevintg.com.
If you're looking to talk with other listeners about a case we've covered, you can join the Murder Sheet discussion group on Facebook. We mostly focus our time on research and reporting, so we're not on social media much. We do try to check our email account, but we ask for patience as we often receive a lot of messages. Thanks again for listening.